Special edition of the Out of Sight podcast on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You know, we know you love them, so we got a special one. Dave and I are interviewing Kate Scott, play-by-play TV announcer for the Philadelphia 76ers. Kate Scott has done many, many things. She's the first woman to cover an NFL game on the radio, the first woman to call a football game on the Pac-12 network, the first all women's NHL game on NBCSN for International Women's Day in 2020, the first to call a Warriors game on the radio, and as a sophomore at Cal Berkeley, she was the first Mike Mann slash Mike Person leading cheers for Cal Berkeley. The list goes on and on, but you know what? We love her here as the head play-by-play announcer of the Philadelphia 76ers. Dave cannot wait to talk to Kate. This is pre-recorded, so everything is set, ready to go. I hope you're as happy listening to this podcast as we were to record it.
Really, really excited to talk to Kate. It's just so hard to do what she did. I mean, Zumoff stepping out when he did, it's kind of like, what if Allen Iverson retired in his prime and suddenly we're just watching Joel Embiid and we're like, well, who is this guy? He's not Iverson. It's going to take us some time. So, but she's coming to her own and I think she's been calling games better and better. So it's been such a joy to listen to her call games this year.
Here it is. Without further ado, David Early, Adil Royster, Kate Scott, let's get it.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing so great, guys. Thanks for having me today.
I understand that this is a whirlwind week for you. You have been doing quite a few podcasts. I actually did a Kate Scott podcast cram sesh myself to listen to some, to make sure we didn't bore you asking the same things over and over. So I went way back to, like, I saw some of your stuff from 2016.
Oh, man.
I saw some fun stuff where you originally thought about being a school teacher. Mm-hmm. So we got the whole gamut.
Wow.
We are so glad and so grateful now to listen to you on Sixers Calls.
Well, thank you so much. It's really great to be here. And I feel like I should apologize to Dave for having listened to me so much over the last few days to prep for this.
No, it was fun because so many of them were laid back.
Because that's where the majority of us broadcasters do our work. The game, the podcast is the fun part, but it's all the prep you do leading up to that shows how dedicated you are to the craft.
The craziest thing that I heard Kate say was, she was calling Niners games, and not at a time where we're down to the 53 man, but at a time where there's like 90 players, and they showed really quick like her stickies of a million people, and then she's saying, and then she's saying, oh, and I'm sleeping in my car around this time too. So,
wow,
yeah, man, it's been a grind to get here. You know, nobody thought that a woman could call sports. I mean, heck, I didn't even think that women were going to be allowed to call sports. I didn't even start calling sports until after I graduated from college, because even when I was at UC Berkeley in school from 2000 to 2005, 2001 to 2005, I should have stayed 5 years in retrospect. College is so much fun, kids. Stay as long as you can. But but even when I was in school, I thought that being a sideline reporter and being a sports anchor were going to be the ceiling for a woman who wanted to work in sports. So yeah, I had to, a lot of people have said, go above and beyond what a lot of my male counterparts had to do to be thought of as maybe viable for a role, and then had to go above and beyond in those roles in order to get to where I am today. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love my journey. I love everything I've learned and it has taught me and all the people that I have met along the way. So it's mine and I love every part of it.
We really appreciate how late Joel Embiid got started too. So you have some kinship with
exactly,
him there.
Yeah.
Picking up the game at like 16, 17, 18.
I don't know if I'm comfortable with that comparison, but I will take it since it came out of your mouth.
Kate, we are so honored and privileged to have you on our little podcast here, our little mom and pop venture. Let's just jump right into it. With the playoffs, Joel Embiid, his health has been really kind of coming into question a little bit. Have you been around the facility and have you seen anything? Like, are you on any like text change? What's your feeling about like next week when things get started for game one?
Are you
one?
Wanting me to break some news here, Dio?
Yes!
Is that what you wanted me to do?
Yes, that is exactly
screw
what
I... Screw NBC Sports Philadelphia. Screw my employer and letting them get the run. Let me tell you guys right now.
I figured they got it first anyway, you know?
Is it a score differential issue?
I do not have any insider information, but what I can tell you is Joel's played through pain a lot this year already. He was not right going into the All-Star break, but he knew how important it was for him to be out there for his guys in order to win basketball games. And that was in January and February. So I have no insider information, but I would put all my chips in the middle of the table to say that the big fella is going to play and he's going to give us everything he has, because I think wow. He and the rest of his teammates know what a good shot they have this year, how much fun they're having playing with each other. And I think they, like all of us fans, want it to last for as long as possible. So I don't know if he'll be 100%, but kind of like every sport, we hear it in football the most. But once you get to the playoffs, like nobody is 100% healthy. Everybody's playing through something. But I think the big fella will be out there and doing what he can for us.
I had to try, you know?
I appreciate it. That's why I had to call you out. Like, you're just talking to me. Nobody else is listening. Just tell me what you know.
Exactly.
Like, I know you've been texting Joel's personal trainers and stuff. Just tell me.
Oh, man. Okay, so Sixers-Celtics matchups. Obviously, they've had our number, and you know, the Sixers may not be totally healthy. And I gotta say, I didn't really count the first game against Celtics because everybody's in feeling it out mode. But the two teams, like their last three meetings, it was a score differential of like 12 points. Yeah. Is it possible this series is like closer than maybe we and the national media might think it is?
Thank you for doing your research with you. Cause I was,
I've been
obviously looking at stuff before this week because I knew that I was going to be asked about Sixers and the potential of a second round meeting with the Celtics. So I think that having the Sixers number only comes down to that 3-1 number, because let's break down a few other things. Okay. So the first time we see them is the season opener. The Celtics made it all the way to the NBA finals. They have their total team back. They are ready.
And Brogdon.
Right. And they added Malcolm Brogdon, who ended up being the sixth man of the year just a week ago. Thank you very much, Dave. So meanwhile, the Sixers are trying to integrate two, which we now know are key pieces of their success this year. PJ Tucker in the starting lineup and De'Anthony Melton coming off the bench, because we're months away from getting Jalen McDaniels. James Harden goes off for 35 points. It's still a pretty good game until the fourth quarter. Then it got away from the Sixers. Okay. Game two, we see them in Boston in February, just before the All-Star break. This is weird too. Tyrese awesome. Maxey is still coming off the bench. It was that in-between time. No Jalen McDaniels yet. Paul Reed was a DNP.
Is this the Blake Griffin three-pointers in the first
Blake
quarter?
Blake Griffin starts because the Blake Celtics Griffin. Are throwing out such a weird lineup. Tatum elbows his teammate in the face, breaks Jaylen Brown's face in the second quarter. So Blake Griffin is Blake Griffin of 2010 in LA. It's Lob City again with Blake Griffin. This is like his one good game of the season. The Sixers made 10 threes. Boston made 19. So they were minus 27 in 3 points. They lost the game by 7 points. Okay. And then game three, Sixers only made 9 threes in that game. They got out rebounded. And still the Celtics needed a Jason Tatum running three at the buzzer to beat the Sixers. And then in the fourth game, which the Sixers finally won, still got out rebounded, lost the turnover battle. The bench only had 10 points, only 7 second chance points, and we still won that game. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because I hope that the national media and everybody else continues to say, man, the Celtics have had the Sixers number this season, because, you know, if they actually look into the details, that is not the case. I think if this ends up being the second round meeting, it's going to be an epic series, Eastern Conference, old school rivals battling things out. Because in my opinion, these are the top two teams that I've seen in the NBA this season.
All right, let me hit you with a quick one. of the four teams on the other side of the bracket, Knicks, Heat, Cavs, Bucks, who do you think emerges from that gauntlet now? Two of those are 3-1, but I can't tell you that those series
I know. Over. I mean, just because I'm an old head, and I saw David Murphy, who's a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, you guys probably saw this too, tweet out that the last time that the Knicks and the Celtics and the Sixers all made the Eastern Conference semis was back in 82-83, which is the last time, obviously, the Sixers went on to win the NBA title. So just because I'm a kid who was born in the 80s, like, I would love to see the Knicks move on. I think they're going to beat the Cavs. I have not been scared by the Bucks this season, hopefully saying that won't come back to bite me. I don't know if they get knocked out by Miami. I still think they have the championship medal. I still think they have a ton of talent, but they just, it's the eye test, right? Like Miami, yeah, they're up 3-1 on the Bucks, but even they look different than the Miami we saw last year. And kind of the same thing with the Bucks. It's hard to put into words. So it's a good thing I'm not calling games anymore this season. But there's just like Chris Middleton's still not looking like Chris Middleton of old. Like Grayson Allen, great shooter, defensive liability, but you got to have him out there. So I think they're still trying to figure stuff out. And at this point of the season, you don't want that to be the case, or you're in trouble.
See, you've had that comment about the Bucks. I said similar about the Miami Heat. I was just like, I do not believe in this Miami Heat team. I said it from the beginning of the season.
No, same here. Jimmy's playoff Jimmy. Jimmy Butler's incredible. And there's some individual pieces that are great, but they're a different team than they were last year.
Apparently, Jimmy Butler saw my comments and he just did the whole Jordan, I took that personally thing. It was just like, Jimmy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, tweet, okay? It was me. It was all me. I take full responsibility. James Harden, we have to talk about this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Now, you've gotten to see James up close more than Dave or I via, you know, shoot arounds practice.
Yeah.
Dave continues to believe that Harden just hasn't looked right since the Bulls game late March. Mm-hmm. What's your take on Harden's play since returning from the Achilles? Like the trouble finishing?
I think bring it on. Bring it on, Dave. Bring on all the slander. Bring on all the doubt. I think James just has a little backpack of disrespect this year.
I'm one of his biggest fans. So as one of his fans, I'm thinking it's hard to watch him.
No, I know. Play it. I know what you're saying. But no one is harder on James than himself. I understand why you're saying what you're saying. The difference to me is he's getting to the cup. He's getting past dudes. His handle looks tighter than it did last season when he couldn't get past anybody. He's not making the layups, and that's frustrating, right? I mean, he had a ton of them in the first half of game four, but so did Tyrese and so did DeAnthony, so much so that the guys were making fun of each other at halftime of that game. Like, can anybody hit a shot? Are we still playing?
Were they?
Or are we all stars? Like, what are we doing out here? So I understand the concern. But I think that James has heard the guys hear and see everything. I think he knows what the story currently is that's been written about him in the postseason. And I think he, more than anybody, wants to write a new chapter this year. I think he really loves playing with these guys. He's 33. So I think that the pains that he had when he was 27, just like all of us, they hurt a little more. They're a little harder to push through. But I thought he had a really good game one and really good game four in the opening series, as far as being the old school point guard. So I understand your concern, but I disagree. I think he's doing okay. I think he looks different than the James we saw when he was rocking and rolling in Houston. And I think we're still all adjusting to that. But I will not be surprised if he has a big game or two in the second round, whoever we play.
Do you have an official or an unofficial opinion on whether or not the Sixers need to make it to the Final Four for him to stick around?
No, I don't. I'll just say, if I was him, because again, I'm not best buddies with James or Joel or any of the guys. From the outside looking in, it sure looks like he's having a really good time with these guys. Like, at times they remind me of a high school team, which is very rare to say about a professional organization in any sport, because it is such a business when you get to this level. Guys' livelihoods, I mean, there's so many levels of added stress than the playing in high school and you're playing free and you're pantsing guys and you're just like having fun, right? Because it's just an after school activity. But at times, and I think that's one of the reasons they've had such a great year, these guys are really enjoying playing with each other. So I understand all the stuff that's come out about Houston. And I know that that's, I mean, he's invested a ton of money there, heart and soul, helping after hurricanes, helping organizations. Like, I understand that. It is a home base for him and always will be. But I think he's also well aware how much fun he's having and the potential that this group has. So I think that if they get close this year, I can see him coming back. The only way I could really see him not coming back is if they win the championship. And he's like, sweet, I got my chip.
I'll take that.
Everybody here would be fine with that. Like, thank you, sir. Have a great time in Houston.
I would start building his statue, whether he left
right?
or not.
Right, exactly. And again, this is just my opinion. I really can't see him leaving if they do anything other than win a championship, because I think just from an outsider's perspective, he realizes how good he has it here right now and how much he wants to win a championship because of what that would do for his legacy. So we'll see.
You alluded to some of the stuff you're privy to, like seeing this team bond and seeing them remind you of a high school team. Can you give us like a peek behind the curtains? I mean, what are you seeing? What is it like to be a broadcaster? Are you on the bus with them? Are you in the same hotel? Do you hop down to the hotel and get a beer and see Niang having a hamburger? do you get like Starbucks with Shake Milton and then all board?
Sometimes we do. So the way I try to do it is...
There's a podcast idea, by the way. I Starbucks with Shake.
See, there you go. Love Shake. Love all the guys on this year's team, truly. So I try to stay out of everybody's way as much as I can, because these guys, again, are being bugged all the time. And every time we're on the road, it is totally a business trip. The players have their own bus when we're going to shoot around. But before games and after games, players trickle out at all different times because some are getting treatment, some are talking to the press. So yeah, there is some interactions that I have with players. My dog is now joining the podcast. This is Piper down here.
We don't have to ask if you're a cat or dog person now.
I am both, but currently a dog person because my wife is deathly allergic to cats. So that has ruled them out of the family equation. but so sometimes I can be on the bus with guys. Sometimes, yeah, if they want to go out to a coffee shop, they always have everything they need at the hotel. There's meals, there's coffee and everything. But some guys like to go out and explore the local haunts. So sometimes I'll run into them there. At practice and shoot arounds, which Doc and the staff have been kind enough to allow me to be at, any ones that I want. So I try to take advantage of that every day that I can, because you learn something. You know, I try to get there early to see who the first guy out shooting is, if somebody's interacting with somebody, if somebody's working on something different than I've seen them work on before every other practice. Like, that's where, as a broadcaster, you can learn a lot of that inside stuff that you can't learn anywhere else. It's just being there and being around players and being, that's when I get to see the fun, you know, like high school moments of guys having fun with each other. So I'm a part of things, but also try to stay out of the way, if that makes sense.
The stuff that you have seen, Tyrese has been vocal that Joel has taken a step in terms of vocal leadership this year. Everyone has talked about Tucker. Can you validate that type of stuff we've heard? Do you see that same type of stuff? Do you see changes? Do you see leadership?
Yeah, definitely. And in addition to that, just... again, little things that can make a big difference. You know, Joel is, in my opinion, he's kind of an introvert, likes to keep to himself, loves to FaceTime with his son, Arthur, which those are some of my favorite moments when we're walking back to the bus after shoot around. And here's this huge 7-foot, almost 300 pound dude who should be the MVP of the NBA being like, show me the airplane to his son. Just, he's a human. And that's my favorite part of getting to be around these guys all the time, because I get to see them way more than you all do as just humans, as opposed to basketball players. But on the road, don't do it all the time, but sometimes the guys will go out to team dinners. And I know in the past that it's easy for a star player to just say, I'm good tonight, I'm going out with my boys, or I'm staying home and talking to my fiance or whatever. But I know that over the last couple of years, Joel has started to do that more. And that matters. That hour and a half that you can spend with your teammates, just, you know, eating, talking about life and stuff, that matters. And then, yeah, he has been more vocal at practice and shoot around. And then, I mean, can't say enough about PJ Tucker. I mean, today at the end of practice. They're scrimmaging, they're going hard. And it's practice, right? AI told us all years ago, we're talking about practice. It's the practices in between the first round and the second round. Like, you don't want to get hurt. You just want to keep your rhythm and keep your wind about you. And at the end of a scrimmage, who's going up and getting an offensive rebound and getting fouled and making a couple of big free throws in practice? It's PJ Tucker, the 37-year-old PJ Tucker. And Tyrese talked after practice about seeing him care so much about the details, knowing he is the one guy on this team with a ring. Sometimes he doesn't need to talk at all. Sometimes he just needs to be PJ. And the other guys are like, oh crap. Okay. That's how I need to go about my business, right? And obviously what he said to Paul Reed in the locker room of game one at halftime and the locker room in game four at halftime, like he's all about it. And guys recognize that he wasn't a top overall pick. They realize he had to go to Ukraine and had to work his way back to the NBA. So he has everybody's respect. That goes so far. And I think the added toughness of a D'Anthony Melton and Jalen McDaniels, like I was just looking back at that. Last year we got to the postseason, the first two guys off the bench were Georgia Niang and Matisse Thybulle. Guys I love, but as Daryl Morey and company said before training camp this year, they're mostly one-way guys, right? You brought George in for his three-point shooting, you brought Matisse in for his defense. First couple of guys off the bench this year are D'Anthony Melton, Jalen McDaniels, Paul Reed. Those are all two-way guys who are long, they're fast, they're tough, they're aggressive. Like,
yes.
Therein is a huge difference between last year's team and this year's team.
Another difference between last year's team and this year's team is the emergence of one Tyrese Maxey. If there's one person that has personified like fun in this group, it's Maxey. Like, what has been the difference between your first year here with him and then going into this year? Like, how has that experience been just watching him mature into this potential superstar?
Yeah, it's so fun. I mean, I still haven't found the exact perfect verbiage, but I look at these guys like either my younger brothers or some of them, they could be my kids. But I just care so much for them. And I actually was just telling a friend driving home from practice today, like just seeing Tyrese was the first one on the microphone today. He talked before Doc and he talked before George. And that is a part of the learning and growing process as well, getting used to doing NBA media. So to see the Tyrese that I saw last year, who was already pretty good at it, but today it's postseason. There's a ton of people there. There's more, you know, there's like 20 or 30 people all crowded around you at this little microphone. And Tyrese sits down and he's not this shy first or second year kid anymore. He's like, claps his hands. All right, y'all, what are we talking about today? What are we talking about? And it's like just the confidence that it takes, even though it seems like a small thing to sit down and do that.
Because Cassell in the background yelling, that's my protege.
exactly.
Sam Cassell's like, I built that.
Yeah.
It's just been, so it's been awesome. As somebody who I hope that I'm going to be able to look back and say I kind of started my Sixers career pretty much at the same time he did. I know it was his second year, but it was his first real year with him just getting thrown into the starting lineup with Ben not playing and just rolling from there. So I feel a connection because of that, because he got a lot of his first big moments and I got to be the voice of a lot of those moments. So I'm rooting for him like crazy. It's been so cool to watch him gain confidence, gain strength. I mean, he looks like a bigger dude out there, right? You could just tell that he's growing into it. And I'm not comparing him, you know, I'm not making the comparison that they're the same guy, but I was lucky enough to be covering the Warriors at the very start of Steph Curry's career. And it was very cool when I started and people were saying, I don't know if the ankles are going to hold up. Warriors fans were calling into the radio stations out there saying, man, I don't think we should sign him to a four-year contract. Like this guy's just going to be broken ankles. It's going to be a waste of money. It's going to be another bad move by this bad organization. And now here we are, and he's built up his strength and he can fight through screens and he's playing defense and he's hitting big shots. And again, I don't see the exact same trajectory for Tyrese, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I have seen some similarities, and I'm hopeful that, he continues the rise that he's shown these last couple of years.
So before the aggregators come in, just like let's just preface, Kate Scott is not directly comparing Tyrese Maxey to Steph Curry. She's not doing that. I'm just saying
it takes a lot of work for smaller guys like Tyrese, like Steph, to work their way into finding their NBA footing, and I think he's off to a great start.
You filled in for Mark. That's some huge shoes to fill. You mentioned Allen Iverson, and I think when people think of Mark, they think of all of his famous catchphrases, but they also think of him calling an MVP season. And so not only are you filling in for Mark, it's kind of like if Joel were to fill in for prime AI, right? Because people are like, Mark was still in his prime, and now we got someone new. As I heard you phrase that, like, who is this blonde chick from the Bay, right? Like, why, what are they going to like? And then suddenly, you're calling an MVP season, which is just insane. And if we do look back on this as an MVP season for Joel Embiid, it would be crazy to deny that you aren't a small part of that, because what's going to stick out in my mind are some of his best highlights and you saying for your MVP consideration all year long. What would it mean to you to have called an MVP season so early in your Sixers career?
Wow. I haven't even thought about that. So you're the first one to actually bring that up. So
I mean, we will look back on that in 25 years and see some of Joel's highlights and hear you.
That's what I say before every broadcast in the talk back. Hey, all, let's have fun. Let's try not to suck. So I hope that I didn't suck. No, but I think it would be wild. It would be an honor, because I've compared Joel to Steph a lot of times, because I used to say, how lucky are we to Warriors fans? Like, how lucky are we that this dude is on our team and we just get to watch him on a nightly basis? And I said that in regards to Steph. And it took me about 10 games before I felt the exact same way about Joel last year. Like, this guy is a 300-pound ballet dancer. He's out there doing Kobe moves, and he is 7 feet tall and 300 pounds. Is that Hakeem? Is that Dirk? Is that Kobe? Is that Michael? No, that's Joel Embiid. And I get paid to call his game. So it would be an incredible honor. And I would hope that somewhere in there, Joel would be happy with a couple of the calls I made of some of his big moments.
Do you have a favorite and a least favorite call of your own since you started here?
I liked a call that a lot of people had good feedback to this year as well. Joel's, what turned out to be the game winner against the Blazers a couple of months ago. I still should have said, after I said whatever, spinning and fading and hitting, before I called out the time, I should have said Sixers lead 1.1 to go. So I'm nothing if not relentlessly self-critical, guys. That's how I got it. Yeah. But overall, I didn't try to do too much. That has been my focus all year. Just call what you see. Because my least favorite call so far is actually Joel's game three in the postseason last year against Toronto, what turned out to be the game winner. I tried to hit a grand slam when there was nobody on base. I should have just called what I said. I was screaming. I was so excited. It was my first game winner in the NBA.
You feel like you overdid it,
which makes sense because it was my first game winner in the NBA. So oftentimes when you're doing your first, you put a little too much into it, you overdo it.
Well, live, I think we were all screaming with you, so exactly. I probably so didn't hear what you said.
I don't think anybody noticed.
I was just like,
exactly. And a lot of people said, no, we loved it. Like, it showed that you loved Philly. You were just as excited as us. But in retrospect, I wish I, you know, it wasn't for the win because there was still time on the clock. I got a little confused about shot clock and game clock because I was so excited. I was a little too yelly, in my opinion, which is something as a woman I have to watch out for because people aren't used to hearing a woman call games. And then when you start to get excited, then even fewer people like that. So I have to watch my tone a lot more than I think some of my male counterparts have to do. And then I wish I would have just let the picture do more of the talking. So I wish I would have said something to the effect of Embiid for the lead, got it, 0.7 to go, and then just laid out, because that's the difference between being a radio and a television announcer. Radio, Tom has to say all the things because nobody knows what the score is at the time or where on the court it is. But on TV, you can see all those things. So So that's a call.
Drake falling to his knees.
Look forward to having another chance to call an Embiid game winner, and I think that I will. So
you got quite a few this year, maybe not at the buzzer, but I mean, we got essentially game winners in Utah and LA. You got a whole bunch of them that put them up for good, and that was huge. Do you feel like, I noticed you said the haters have subsided. They were coming at you fast and furious, but they've dissipated quite a bit. Do you feel like there are things in your bag in year two that weren't in your bag in year one? Where do you think, if I could get you to brag a little bit, that you have improved?
I think I've improved all around, and that's what I've done in every year of my broadcasting career. So I think I felt more comfortable this year. I think I was more myself, because like anybody getting any new job, imagine yourself going to a new company on the other side of the country and how much adjustment that would take, and then make that job. You're actually on live television in front of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people every night who want to critique you, and you're taking over for somebody that people wish hadn't retired. So there was just so many layers to that. But I knew that if I was just myself and I continued to do the work, that people would eventually maybe come around. But I also knew that that wasn't up to me. I just had to keep calling games and keep doing the work and keep listening back and listening to what I liked and didn't like, and asking people I respected in the industry what they liked and didn't like, and then continuing to build off of that. I mean, it's similar. I don't know if other broadcasters do this, but for me, broadcasting is similar to being a player. Like, you watch film and you break things down and you take forward what you liked and then you throw out what you didn't like. So just trying to expand the vocabulary. Trying to let the picture do the talking more times, trying not to yell, trying to keep my tone as palatable as possible when I can, while still being energetic and excited, because I think you guys and most fans know at this point, like, that's just who I am. I'm so excited about life each and every day.
There's like the Kate Scott gravelly in between, where it's like, read with the rim rocker. I don't know how you do it.
So I'm still even trying to work on that. Like, it's interesting you bring that up, because it is really natural for me. But like, after game three, which was wild and another learning experience for me, ejections and technical fouls. And
that was
my first game with all of that madness. And my wife, who is the most critical, I think, of everyone after the game, was like, I think you got too growly a little bit. Like, I want to hear you. No, it's
great.
I wanted to ask you
if she watches and gives you
feedback. Yeah. She's my hardest critic. She's like, why weren't you smiling more? You shouldn't wear that top again. It didn't look good. I thought you should have worn that. It's too gravelly. I'm like, great to see you, babe. What do you want for dinner?
is she a sports person?
She is a huge sports fan. Yeah. She's all in on the Sixers, obviously, now. Nice. Big college and NFL fan as well. She likes going to baseball games and drinking beer and people watching, but that's, you know, she's more of a football, basketball, soccer kind of gal. But to answer your question, I think the biggest thing was I got more comfortable this year, which helped with my confidence. I feel like I belong here now. I know not everybody feels that way. This feels like home, and I'm so looking forward to, in year three, really just taking it to a whole nother level. I talked to Ian Eagle, who's the Nets broadcaster and taking over for Jim Nantz as the voice of March Madness.
I love Ian.
Ian Eagle's great. Voice.
I mean, he's my favorite broadcaster right now, because you can hear the joy he calls games with, but he's also super short and to the point. Like, I'll watch him call Nets games, and he'll, because it's on TV and he doesn't have to say anything, swing. Down low, kicks from the corner, like
cold-blooded,
lets the game, and then he's like, "Oh, John Morant, a job breaker!" Like, it's short and it's energetic. So, I listen to his games with a lot of focus, just trying to see things that I can pick. But I bring him up because I was talking to him last week, and he said, "You know, it's funny you mentioned wanting to get to year three, because that's the season I really felt like I belonged with the Nets. Like, you get the move, you get all the interviews, you get all that crap out of the way, you've traveled with a team for a couple years now, you know all the hotels, you know all the stuff that nobody else thinks about, you've reduced all the drag, so now all you have to focus on is calling that game that night, and everything gets so much easier once you get to that." And he's like, that's how I felt year three, and I'm just He's like, I thought you took such big strides between last year and this year. You just sound so much more comfortable and so much more you. And like, you're kind of playing around with different phrases and things that you're trying to see if you want to keep him as a catchphrase, or maybe just want to leave him in year two. So, and I totally agreed. So I'm really, really looking forward to next year.
Kate, we're all looking forward to next year. And hopefully this comes with, you know, possibly a ring ceremony on opening night. We'll see what happens.
Let's knock on the wood.
I'm doing it right now. Kate, thank you so much for joining us. I did want to see if you would like to plug your Girls on the Run event that you had this Thursday, April 27th. Kate Scott is going to be hanging out with Philly's own Dawn Staley with Girls on the Run. So
excited.
Any details that you would like to share with our fine Liberty Ballers listeners?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And if anybody is thinking, I need something to do on this Thursday night in Philly, it's at the Lucy in the middle of the city from 6 to 10 p.m. Girls on the Run is a fantastic nonprofit organization that is all about getting young girls physically active and teaching them teamwork and then helping build their confidence through that. And I cannot tell you how much sports impacted me as a young girl. I am here because of everything I learned playing sports.
What was your favorite sport to play?
I played everything. I played soccer, basketball, tennis, and I ran track and field. Nice. I loved basketball, but I was bad at it. So soccer was my best sport that I played, and I was actually going to play in college until I tore my meniscus and then my broadcasting career started. But so Girls on the Run is a wonderful organization. Dawn, obviously, is one of the goats. I've never met her before. I'm so excited to interview her. But she also has the Dawn Staley Foundation, which has similar ideals about wanting to get young girls involved in sports, because it's been proven time and time again that when girls learn teamwork, resilience, how to bounce back from failure, how to be confident in themselves while working up a sweat and getting dirty and fighting your way through things, that they're then much more successful in life. So looking forward to it. Girls on the Run, Philly, you can Google it. Tickets are still available. It's a sneaker soiree, so we're wearing, you know, blazers and cool kicks. So wear your cool kicks and come out and support a great cause.
Get some Hardens.
I'm actually, they're in the running. I have three outfits that I'll run by the wifey tonight, but the Hardens are definitely in consideration because I think they look pretty fly up there. Do the kids say fly anymore? I'm old. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fine. If you've ever listened to our podcast, you know that like this podcast kind of has like a 70s motif to it. So fly is the appropriate word on this podcast, Kate.
Also, Jets fans are hoping you're not old because they just got Aaron Rodgers, who I think was at Cal around the same time.
Oh my god, he was. Actually, Aaron and I know each other, and I have a number 8 signed Cal Aaron Rodgers jersey in my basement. So it's pretty wild that he's going back to number 8. And
I think he's Joel's favorite player. Joel always tweeted, go Pat, go. I love
that's him. What I thought. So maybe I'll be the messenger is what you're saying, because I'm sure those guys, you know, don't connect with each other already. I'm sure they next don't make that connection.
Kate, thank you so much again for joining us. You can listen to Kate Scott when she's on NBC SN Philly. Follow her on Twitter at Kate T. Scott. Kate, thank you so much for joining us. It was such an honor and pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you both for having me today. Appreciate you. Appreciate the difficult questions you asked. And 12 more, y'all. 12
more. We didn't even get to the hard ones. These are the softballs.
Okay, speak for yourselves. But 12 more. And I hope, knocking on wood, fingers crossed, that I'll be emceeing a parade down Broad Street later this summer. Great to chat with y'all. Go Sixers.
Trust the process. Go Sixers. Talk to you soon, Kate.